to Musician's Health. I'm Andy Lutz, and today my guest is Robert Rickover. Robert is a teacher of the Alexander Technique living in Lincoln, Nebraska. He also teaches on a regular basis in Toronto, Canada. He has a website at alexandertechnique.com. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, I know a number of musicians swear by the Alexander Technique and say it's helped them a lot with their playing and singing. I think a lot of us have only heard a little about it, though, and don't have a great idea of what it is. To start off, could you give us just a short explanation of what the technique is?
Well, I would say it's a way of learning how to use your body, your physical mechanism, more effectively at whatever you do, whether it's playing a musical instrument or singing or chopping wood or walking or lying down. It really is for any activity you do. But it has a special attraction to musicians because they tend to do the same activity over and over again, bowing of a violin or playing piano. The same physical movements tend to be repeated quite often, and it becomes pretty easy for musicians to develop things like carpal tunnel syndrome, repetitive strain injury. And the Alexander Technique can help quite a bit with that.
And what kind of benefits in particular can musicians expect to see from the Alexander Technique?
Well, the first one is that they can learn how to do the activities they're doing with playing with less unnecessary stress or strain on their body. So by observing their habits of playing or singing, and with the help of a teacher, they can learn quite often that there's some things they do that are actually getting in their way that they may not be aware of. A good example of that might be a violinist that when he or she goes to put the instrument up on their shoulder, hunches their shoulder up and tenses in that area. And over time, that can lead to neck and shoulder pain, which is, in fact, what quite a few violinists have.
Let's talk a little bit about the teaching process. What would one expect if one came to a lesson with you?
Well, the first thing that would happen is I would probably ask a new student to do some very simple activities like sitting in a chair, standing, walking, a few things to give me some idea of what their patterns of movement are. If they were a musician or instrumentalist or singer, at some point during the lesson, probably have them play their instrument or sing. And what I would be looking for is some signs that they're creating some unnecessary tension in their bodies as they play or sing. Now, typically, that would show up, among other things, as a little tightening in their neck. It's very common for people to tense their necks a bit when they begin an activity, especially one where there's a lot invested in it. For performers, singing or playing an instrument would qualify for that.
And do you have a lot of experience working with musicians?
Well, I do, somewhat by accident. I myself am not a musician, but when I first started teaching in Canada, in Toronto, I live quite near the Royal Conservatory of Music and the University of Toronto Music School. And so right from the beginning, I got a lot of musicians as students. And it was actually in that process that I began to appreciate what some of the challenges of being a musician are. I think, like most people, I had assumed that the most demanding physical activities were things like sports, high-performance sports, or mountain climbing, or that kind of thing. And what I learned in working with musicians and singers was that, in fact, what they were doing was in many ways a lot more challenging because of the very long hours of practice and playing and the repetition of the same movements over and over again. that's in its own way, I would say that that's actually more challenging than many sports activities. In our today, you'll hear terms like repetitive strain injury or carpal tunnel syndrome used quite often. You'll see articles in the paper, you can read magazine articles that mention those terms. But 25 or 30 years ago, those terms were only used in perhaps medical literature. No one used those terms in common activity. It was really the advent of computer terminals that created the epidemic of repetitive strain injury and RSIs. Now, musicians have known about those problems for forever, really, but they didn't generally have those terms available to describe them. So the phenomenon is old, but it's entered the popular usage in recent years, mainly, as I say, because of video display terminals, keyboards, and the like.
Interesting. I was wondering if you could give us just a few more examples of specific instances in which you've helped students.
Well, I have a student now who's a violinist, and she displays that very pattern that I talked about earlier, that when her tendency is when she brings her violin up on her shoulder, rather than just letting it rest, she has a very strong habit of kind of scrunching it up and in, and then pushing down quite heavily with her chin on it, and she has the classic symptoms of neck pain and some shoulder pain. Now, with some practice, she's begun to learn, and it's taken a few lessons, but she's begun to learn that she doesn't need to actually do much with her shoulder, that her shoulder can just be a resting platform, and that the violin can just come to rest gently on her shoulder, and then she can easily turn her head and let her chin rest on the violin. Now, there has to be a little bit of work there to keep it in place, but not very much. Now, at first, when I showed that to her, she kept worrying that the violin was going to fall off, and took us a little while to get her to see that, in fact, she didn't have to clench it so much. It could basically rest on her shoulder with a little bit of pressure from her chin, and of course the other hand on the bow. Another example that I think is pretty common. I have a student who's just started taking lessons, who's a singer. Now, his pattern, and it's a very common one among singers, is that you could be standing talking to him and his posture would be quite okay. But the minute he decides that he's going to sing, he kind of stiffens himself up a little bit, arching his lower back, tightening his legs, tightening his whole body to be in a singing stance. And you can see that a lot with singers. And really, it's just a habit that gets in the way, because all of that tightening doesn't do anything for his voice. And in fact, quite the opposite. It tends to tighten his neck a little bit, restrict his breathing. So his vocal mechanism isn't working quite as well as it might. His breathing's a little bit shallower. And when we've experimented with just leaving himself alone to begin singing, out would come a much stronger voice, but with less effort on his part. Now, at first, for him, it was quite difficult to get that this was a legitimate way of singing. He had kind of an idea that in order to sing, he had to do some extra stuff with his body. Where he got that, who knows? Could have been from his singing teacher, could have been from watching other singers. So at first, he wouldn't quite believe that his voice sounded better and that what he was doing was legit. So we brought in someone to listen to him, who know, because I'm not myself a terribly good judge of music. So we got someone who actually knew something about music to listen to him and report back to him. Yes, it sounded better. There was more vibrato, all that kind of stuff. And after, you know, a few experiences like that, he's learned that he does not have to do all that extra hauling of himself up in order to sing. He can just sing. So those are a couple of examples that I think might be helpful.
Great. I think some of our listeners might be wondering, how soon could they expect to see results? Would it be after the first lesson, or would it take a few meetings before they begin to see some?
It depends. Some people can get something out of the first lesson that they can immediately apply and make noticeable changes. More frequently, it's usually 2 or 3, maybe 4 lessons before people start noticing things outside of lessons. What we're dealing with here are some pretty deep-seated habits, and they don't just go away because you show someone a different way of doing things. They tend to reassert themselves, and it takes a little bit of practice and a little bit of repetition to learn how to let go of them. I would say the typical student comes for lessons perhaps once a week or maybe twice a week at the beginning for a period of a few weeks, maybe a couple of months, sometimes longer. But there's no standard set of lessons. Some people get all they need out of a few lessons. Other people decide they want to continue studying for months and even years. A few people, like myself, decide this is so interesting and so beneficial that they end up going on a 3-year teacher training course to learn to be a teacher. So there's a lot of variety. But I would say that for someone contemplating taking lessons, I would give it 3 or 4 lessons. If you don't notice anything in that time, then you might want to consider trying a different teacher. Not every teacher is right for every student. But usually within a few lessons, you would get some idea of what the process is about and where it would be taking you.
And if our listeners want to learn more about this, what will be the best way to do that?
Well, I'm biased, of course, but I would say that my website at alexandertechnique.com, and that's all lowercase and all one word, alexandertechnique.com, that's the most comprehensive source of information. You can find out pretty much anything you'd want to know about the technique from that page. There is a whole separate page on that site devoted to the Alexander Technique and musicians. There are a lot of articles relating to that. There is very comprehensive information on how to find a teacher in your area, what to look for in a teacher, the history of the technique. There are a lot of books and videos and DVDs that are available about the technique that you can order from that site. You can also, there's a whole page devoted to learning the technique on your own, which is a little problematic if you don't have a teacher, but if you have only limited access to a teacher, or perhaps all you can do is attend occasional workshops, then the information on that page may be very helpful to you. So there are links on that site to really every source of information about the technique worldwide.
And what was that address again?
AlexanderTechnique.com.
All right, Robert Rickover, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.